Welcome to the Books of Titans podcast, where I seek truth in the world's great books. I'm your host, Eric Rostad, coming to you from the beautiful Books of Titans studio in Franklin, Tennessee. My goal is to read 200 of the great books over the next 10 years and share what I'm learning. I'll talk a bit about each book, tie ideas together from a variety of genres, and share the one thing I always hope to remember from each of the great books. Today I'm going to cover the Babylonian Creation Epic, also called the Enuma Elish. This is book 16 for my 2023 reading list, and it's book 5 for my overall Great Books Project reading list. Well, I put off this episode for a while. I read through the Enuma Elish last May, so May of 2023, and I've wanted to cover it on the podcast for a while, but I knew I needed to understand it better. The first time I read it through, I didn't get everything there was in the book, and it was one of those I knew I was going to have to come back to it and just take it slowly, take a lot of notes, that kind of thing. And it's a short book. I mean, the Enuma Elish part of it is just 53 pages, but I knew I was going to have to dig in, take my time, and I finally had time to do that. So here we are. So what is this thing? Well, it's the Babylonian Creation Epic, and it covers topics like the origins of the universe, the gods, and mankind. Most of the works of this time were known by their first words, and so that would be the title of the work. And so Enuma Elish means when the heavens above, and so that's just the first line of this Babylonian creation epic. And so the way it's translated, I read a few different translations of it, and the first one was Timothy J. Stephanie, and he translated the first line of this epic as the following: at a time when even the glories above had yet to be named. And then another translator, Stephanie Daly, she translated it in this way: when skies above were not yet named. So you, right from the first line, you get the idea that this is at the start of things. This is the beginning when things didn't even have names, and that's where this all starts. And then from there, it's the origins of the universe, the gods, and mankind. So the date that I've generally seen that's attributed to this work is 1100 BC. Now, that's very hard to know for certain. First off, it would have first been said aloud, or so orally. And so just even the idea of putting it down on these cuneiform tablets, it's hard to get an exact date, but we do have these tablets from a few different places. One of those is the Library of Ashurbanipal, and that's where we also have the Gilgamesh, the Epic of Gilgamesh. So date-wise, 1100 BC, that would be before Homer, but it would be after Gilgamesh. So, you know, somewhere in between those. I want to just go through and give a quick overview of what is contained in these. The Enuma Elish is made up of seven tablets. And so I'll just go through these seven tablets and what's in them quickly. And I'm going to try to just limit it to four or five characters here. Just, there are a number of characters mentioned, a number of gods and that sort of thing, but I'm just going to focus on four just so we keep the names low. And then, like I said, it's 53 pages. I hope you get it and read through it. So the four characters are Apsu, Tiamat, Ea, and Marduk. And sorry for any scholars out there, I'm sure I've butchered these names terribly, but those are the four main people I'm going to talk about as I go through these seven tablets here. Before I do so, though, I just want to make a quick comment. As I was reading this, I was thinking that this storyline and these names are such that I would want to add these to the notebook. And when I say the notebook, I used to carry a notebook in college where I would take book notes, and I still have it. It's still right next to me here on my desk, but these are like the main note, the most important notes. So like, I mean, I would only put things in there that I knew I would probably see elsewhere or see in other books. These were like the most important things to remember as I read other things. And that's just the idea I got as I was reading the Enuma Elish, because I've seen these names so many other places, especially last year when I was reading through the Epic of Gilgamesh and some other works from Mesopotamia. So you see these names, and then what was great in the versions that I read, especially the Timothy J. Stephanie one, in the introduction, he ties this to other works as well. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, I just had this sense that like I need to write these things down and have them fresh and easily accessible. You know, even better yet, hopefully I remember these things just in my mind and can recall them, and just the basic outlines of the story. So that's what I want to do here, is just give you the quick outline of what happens in the Enuma Elish, because if you read other works from Mesopotamia, you're going to see these gods mentioned. So it's nice to kind of have the backstory here. I liken it to reading Hesiod and reading maybe Mythology by Edith Hamilton, reading that before you get into Homer, because you get the idea of the origin of the gods and who fathered who and all that sort of thing. So let's get into it. We got seven tablets here. Tablet one, here's what happens. Apsu is the first being, and he, along with Tiamat, who is the mother who gives birth to all, they intermingle. And Apsu is attributed or is connected with fresh water, and Tiamat is connected with salt water. So these two waters intermingle, and then they have children. And so there's a number of different gods that they have, and I won't mention those just to keep it simple here. But after a while, these gods, their children, the grandchildren, the great grandchildren, they begin making too much noise. And so Apsu tells Tiamat, he says, "We need to get rid of all these gods so that we can get some sleep." And Tiamat is horrified by what Apsu has just said. And she makes the comment, "Could we permit our own offspring to thus be eradicated?" And so she's at first is not for this, but Ea, who is one of the I guess great grandsons of Apsu, he gets word of what's going to happen, and he fights back and he crushes Apsu under his feet. And later on, Ea and his wife have a son named Marduk. And so here we've got the four main characters right away in tablet one: Apsu, Tiamat. They're kind of the founders of it all. Tiamat is the mother who gave birth to all, and then Ea, and then Ea's son Marduk. So after Apsu is killed and crushed by Ea, Tiamat joins with some of the other gods, and they plan to kill Ea, who killed her husband. So that's all in tablet one. Now we go to tablet two, and Tiamat kind of goes further and calls together this legion of demon army against her sons. And Ea and another god called Anshar, they go out and they scope out what's going on with Tiamat to see if they could fight her, to see if they could destroy her. But they come back terrified. They can't do it. And so the third person that goes out to scope out Tiamat is Marduk. And at this point, he's called Lord Marduk. And he comes back and he asks for permission to cut Tiamat down to size. That's the quote, "Cut Tiamat down to size." So that's it all in tablet two. Tablet three, there is an assembly of the gods, and they pronounce a destiny for Marduk. Then we get to tablet four, and there is a single combat, and the single combat is between Marduk and Tiamat. Tiamat, again, is the mother who gave birth to all. And Marduk, in this single combat, catches Tiamat in a net, and then he's got control of the winds by this point, and he blows the winds at Tiamat. Tiamat opens her mouth to try to capture the winds, and thinking that she'll be able to capture it, but the wind just like blows up her stomachs to where it's huge. Marduk shoots an arrow into her belly. It splits. She splits in two, and she's dead. And then Tiamat's cadaver is split, and then marvelous things are made from her body. And this is creation. So this is the creation part of the epic. The creation of the world comes out of the destruction of Tiamat's body. So again, Tiamat was the mother who gave birth to all, and now out of her body is a kind of birth of creation. Also, what happens in Tiamat being killed is that Tiamat is kind of shown as being the chaotic force. And so once Tiamat is killed, there's a certain level of order that is now in place. That's tablet four, that single combat between Marduk and Tiamat. So let's go to tablet five. Tablet five, Marduk orders chaos from the body of Tiamat. And then tablet five is really about the establishment of a number of different things. So again, this order is being created. So there's the establishment of the calendar, the hemispheres, clouds, the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, which pour out of the eyes of the dead Tiamat. Half of her body makes up heaven, and then the other half makes up earth. And Babylon is set as the high god's place, the focal point for all religious practices. So Babylon is mentioned in tablet five to be the place for the gods. Now, just two tablets left. So tablet six, this is a big one. This is the creation of man. So how do you think man would have been created in this epic? Well, humankind is the reason, first of all, was that humankind was created to do the work of the gods. So up to that point, the gods are doing all the work. There's a ton of work. They didn't have any leisure. They're kind of sick of the whole thing. And so the reason that humankind is created in the first place is to do the work of the gods. And they are made from the blood and bones of a rebellious one. And this is a rebellious one who worked with Tiamat in the rebellion, and his name was Kingu. And so out of the body, so Kingu is killed, and out of the body of Kingu is in the blood and the bones, is humankind is created out of that. Timothy Stephanie, again, the translator of one of the versions I was referring to, says, thus kings in his rebellion, or Kingu in his rebellion, is not unlike Satan. And so this becomes the source of the innate rebelliousness within mankind. End quote. And so just an interesting idea. Humankind wasn't created from like a perfect God you get this idea that humankind is perfect. Humankind is created out of this rebellious one. And it just kind of a neat thing to consider when thinking about that. I want to read one other part here. And this comes from This actually comes from the Epic of Gilgamesh and the version translated by Andrew George, which is kind of the gold standard for translations of the Epic of Gilgamesh. So this was the first book on my Great Books reading list last year. But in one of the versions of Enuma Elish that I read, it referred to this introduction in the Epic of Gilgamesh by Andrew George here. And so I just want to read this one part that talks a little bit more about the creation of mankind being from this rebellious person. So here we go. The god who was executed to provide the blood was not the best material. In one tradition, at least, he was the leader of the rebels who had instigated a mutiny. Small wonder, then, that mankind could be wayward. End quote. So that was Andrew George on that same topic. So continuing on in tablet six here, there are 600 gods by this point, and they want to thank Marduk for the work that he's done. And so they build Babylon, and then they had constructed a lofty ziggurat fit for the Apsu. And again, Timothy Stephanie, the translator, he notes here that this could be the Tower of Babel. So this ziggurat that is being built for Marduk, this could actually be what in the Genesis account is known as the Tower of Babel. So that was really interesting. I liked the Timothy Stephanie version because he did get into a lot of that, and I'll highlight that in just a little bit. But just some connections between the Bible and the creation epic here, the Babylonian creation epic, and then there are some other connection points as well. So that's Tablet 6, the big one, the creation of man. Tablet 7 is continues on from the end of Tablet 6, where we start learning all these different names of Marduk. And there end up being 50 total. And what I thought I'd do is just kind of look through Tablet 7 and just pick out some at random, just to kind of give a flavor for what we're talking about. So he is called Surser, who heaped the mountains atop Tiamat, who captured among the spoils of war the cadaver of Tiamat. He is ruler of the land and is likewise their good shepherd, who is given freely agriculture, garden land, and plow land, who struck out into the wide sea of Tiamat, then provoked, and he was spread over the entire field of battle like a bridge. He is called Gil, who collects great piles and masses of grains, bringing both grain and herds, supplier of the land's fertility. End quote. So those are just two of the 50 names, but you get this idea that he's kind of the god of all things. And so these different names pronounce what he's the god of. And there's a little overlap in some of them. So there's a number that deal with grain. You almost get the idea that, what I found fascinating is he kind of covers all the different attributes of what I'm now reading in the Greek accounts, where these would just be separate gods. So you would have the god of grain, you would have the god of wine, you would have the god of lightning or different things. And they're all different gods. Whereas in this account, Marduk kind of accomplishes all of these things in his own being. And then he just gets different names for these different things. So I love comparing these things. And that was one thing that came to mind, is just Marduk has these 50 names of attributes. But in the Greek accounts, it would seem like there's different Greek gods for each of those things. I also found it really interesting that Marduk is raised above the other gods, because he wasn't the first god. Apsu was. He wasn't the god that created things. He did have some favor with other gods. They liked him even from the beginning. He created mankind out of Kingu, and he defeated Tiamat. And so those things elevated him above the other gods. But it's not like he was the first god or the god of creation. I thought that was interesting in how he was raised above the other gods, but wasn't the first or even the main creator. So the versions that I read of this were, the main one was the Timothy Stephanie version, and I'll link to this in the show notes. This is a very thin book. It contains the Great Flood Myth as well, but it's just the Enuma Elish and the Great Flood Myth. Yesterday, I actually got one other copy, and this was mainly for I wanted to read the introduction and then just to see how some things were translated. So I didn't read through this one, but I just more glanced through it and then read through the introductions. But this is an Oxford World Classics version, and it's called Myths from Mesopotamia. And it contains the creation story, the flood, Gilgamesh, and others. And it's a translation by Stephanie Daly. So she does the some introductions, some great footnotes, and then the translations as well. So I would highlight either, or I'd recommend either of those versions. You may want to get the Oxford World Classics one, just because it has more in there. However, if you're interested in connections between the Bible and the biblical account in the Bible and the account in the Babylonian creation myth, the Timothy J. Stephanie version goes into that a lot more. So depending on your interest in those areas, might determine which copy you want to get. They're both very inexpensive. I think the Oxford one was $11 or $12, and the Enuma Elish one was perhaps even under $10. But I will link to both of those in the show notes. So just a few things to close out this episode. One thing I found very interesting in my reading over the past couple of years is just the parts of the Hebrew Bible. Parts of it were collected and compiled during the Babylonian exile. And so this is when the Babylonians came into the land of Judah. They exile the people into Babylon. And while there, some of these books were collected and put together. And so you just think about that, and they would have been among Babylonians. They would have been perhaps hearing these epics or hearing them performed, or perhaps on clay tablets or other ways. Like, this would have just been in the culture at the time. So I don't know how much they would have heard these, but like, that's what's going on in the culture. That's in our terms, that's what's playing at the movie theaters. And so I love seeing the connection points. I love seeing that the stories are in two places. So like with the flood, the deluge story, you see that in Gilgamesh, you see this in Atrahasis, and then you see it in the story of Noah in the Bible. And but there's differences in the story, and you know, why was it caused? Why was there a flood? What are the ramifications afterward? And then, you know, what happens during it? I love that. I love that idea of thinking, you know, they were within this area, they were exiled in Babylon. How much were they seeing those ideas? How much of what is in the Hebrew Bible is in response to what is going on in the culture of like, hey, here's another way to look at this, or here's how you are to look at this, as opposed to what you're seeing all around you. So I loved kind of going into that, especially with the Timothy Stephanie version there. So let me just read in the introduction of the Timothy Stephanie version here, because this gets into some of what I'm talking about. Thus, while the characters of Apsu, Tiamat, and Marduk are not widely familiar in the modern world, some of these have found their way via other Near Eastern myths to become known to us, specifically through pages of the Bible. Most conspicuous among these is the name of Marduk, the great Babylonian sky god who appears in the Book of Esther as Mordecai, the Benjaminite, as also does the goddess Ishtar appear as Esther herself. The deity Apsu represents the waterly abyss, which was believed, since before the classical age, to underlie the earth, and this conception holds in references to the abyss. But the name of Tiamat is also retained within the Genesis chapter 1 word for the deep, which is Tehom, also used in the book of Isaiah. And then here's a quote from Isaiah 51, verse 10. Art thou not in which hath dried the sea, the waters of the great deep? And then in brackets is Tehom, that word for the deep, which is where Tiamat is retained in that hath made the depths of the sea a way for the ransomed to pass over. Also used in the book of Isaiah. Let me read on the next page. This correspondence between Enuma Elish and the biblical creation, however, goes far deeper in the recognition that the very order of the creation of Genesis chapter 1 is reflected in the generations of gods in Enuma Elish, which is enumerated in the following table. And then end quote. And then if you get this version of the book, there's this great table there that in one column is the Genesis creation, and then what happens on each of the 7 days. The next column is the generation of gods. And so it goes through the different gods. And then the final column is what they are the god of. And so on the Genesis creation day one, you've got light from dark. And then the generations of gods are Anshar and Kishar, and they are the gods of the two semispheres, so light and dark. You've got the water separation, so that's Apsu and Tiamat, which is the fresh water and the salt water. And then it goes on from there. So just really interesting. I loved that that aspect of it. So a few other things here is that Timothy Stephanie, he makes the comment that the creation myth associates the defeat of Apsu and Tiamat with the establishment of cosmic forces. This conflict leads to the creation of the world and mankind. End quote. Again, I find that interesting, this idea of cosmic forces, and that's tied to the defeat of the original gods, Apsu and Tiamat. But then the conflict of getting rid of those two, Apsu and Tiamat, that's what leads to the creation of the world, and then also to mankind. Now, let me move over to the Stephanie Daly version, the Oxford World Classic. And I just want to read one part of this. And before I do that, here's just one thing that she, one quote that she mentions in her introduction to the entire book. And she says this: "The Akkadian stories share common ground with tales in the Old Testament, the Iliad, the Odyssey, the works of Hesiod, and the Arabian Nights." End quote. So that's cool. I'm rereading the Iliad right now. I read the Old Testament earlier this year. And so these Akkadian stories, she says, share common ground with tales in these other major works. I've got the Arabian Nights coming up as part of the Great Books project as well. So that was in her introduction to the entire book of myths from Mesopotamia. Now let me read one part in her introduction to the Epic of Creation, this Enuma Elish. And here she says this: "The Epic of Creation is named an epic in a sense quite different to that of the Epic of Gilgamesh. Here is no struggle against fate, no mortal heroes, no sense of suspense over the outcome of events. The success of the hero god Marduk in the Babylonian version, Asshur in the Assyrian version, is a foregone conclusion. None of the good gods is injured or killed, no tears are shed. Yet cosmic events are narrated. The earliest generations of gods are recounted, leading up to the birth of the latest hero god. The forces of evil and chaos are overcome, whereupon the present order of the universe can be established, with its religious centers, its divisions of time, its celestial bodies moving according to proper rules, and with mankind invented to serve the gods. The gods themselves behave in an orderly fashion. They assemble, discuss, agree, and elect their leaders in a gathering of males. After Tiamat's primeval parturition and the spawning of monsters, goddesses play no part in creating the civilized world, not even in creating creating mankind." End quote. So yeah, just kind of some neat parts there. And I do want to mention the one thing she mentioned there, that Marduk, that's the name in Babylonian. When this was part of Assyrian lore, the Marduk would have the name Asshur, which is where we get Assyrian. So why read this? Why is this work important? It was written so long ago. Does it have any value for us today? And I really think it does. First off, just in this Great Books reading project, I wish I had read this before I read the Epic of Gilgamesh. I wish I had really stuck with it and learned it and just had it in front of mind, because you see these gods mentioned in the Epic of Gilgamesh, and it would just open up the story so much to understand the backstory, kind of like what I said earlier about reading Hesiod before reading Homer, just to get the idea of the theogony of the gods, the birth of the gods and where they came from. Just having that knowledge before digging deeper into some of this other literature is really important. You see some of these names and some of these ideas echo in the Bible and in other works. And so for that, I think it's important to read this book and to know it. Just even Leviathan, some of those ideas come from this, the waters, the kind of order through chaos. Just a lot of things, and especially in this Timothy J. Stephanie version, he quotes a number of different parts of scripture where there are references to these things. I never knew that. I never knew that Enuma Elish, the Babylonian creation epic, was ever mentioned in the Bible. So this is all new to me. It's very cool. I love this kind of thing. And so that's another reason to read it. It's also, I think, important to read just to consider the ramifications for what happens. Like I mentioned earlier, just the ramification that mankind came out of this rebellious god. And you consider the ramifications for that. You consider the ramifications that there's not this, "Thus saith the Lord," and it was done. Like, the creation didn't happen that way. It happened with the cadaver being chopped up, and basically that's what created the world. And then the death of another god is what created mankind. And you just think of worldviews that would come from that, or ways of viewing the world. it's very interesting to note in this that it's all about the gods. You see the birth of mankind, you see the creation of mankind, but you don't hear from mankind in this story. It's all about the gods. And perhaps in the one I cover next, I'll cover the Atrahasis next, the great flood myth. Perhaps in that one, there is more about mankind, but this one's pretty much all about the gods. So I do want to close out this episode with the one thing that stuck out to me that I think is fascinating about this story. And it's just that idea that creation comes out of the destruction. It comes out of the destruction of Tiamat, the mother of all. So she gave birth to the initial gods, who then had their own children. And so you've got all these gods, but they all came from Tiamat. She's like the grandmother of them all, the mother of all the gods. And then her husband is killed. She gets upset. She's killed. And out of her body, creation is made and order is established. This is very different than God speaking creation into existence. And then you get mankind made out of Kingu, that rebellious god. So that's my one thing, just that difference in the creation story, the creation story I always heard growing up, the biblical account and how different this is, but then how there's these pieces that tie together. I think that's wonderful. So if you have interest in this, you know, it's a short one, get it, read it. And if you plan to read some of the other works of Mesopotamia, or even as you heard mentioned here, just the connection to the Old Testament, to the Iliad, to the Odyssey, to Hesiod, and to the Arabian Nights, this would be a good place for you to start off. Let me share just quickly how I fund this entire project, and that is with my other work, where I am a website developer, and I have a company called EPR Creations. This is my 16th year in business, and that's how I fund Books of Titans. So if you know of anybody, or if you know of an organization who is in need of a new website, in need of online consulting, just someone to talk through what is possible online, let me know. I thrive on big projects and big organizations, not on, you know, one or two page websites. So if you know any organization or anyone in that boat, please consider me and pass along my information. I'll have a link to EPR Creations in the show notes for this episode. So that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. I would love to hear from you, especially if you have read the Enuma Elish. If I've butchered names, you can let me know. You can email me and let me know how things are pronounced. Perhaps I missed something very crucial in this book, or you know of another connection. I love hearing from you guys. So please email me. It's eric@booksoftitans.com. And I would love to learn more about this work. I'd love to hear from you and maybe some other resources you have as well, just to better understand this work. Please check out the links in the show notes. I'll have the links to buy these books as well. You can follow the Books of Titans on Instagram or Twitter. And the website is stocked full of resources to help you find the best books and to create a reading list. Be sure to go to that website. It's just booksoftitans.com and sign up for my newsletter there. That's where I keep you guys informed of what I'm reading, what I'm learning, how different books tie together and all that. I'll be back next week to cover the Great Flood Myth, and I can't wait to discuss that. And then I may cover the Iliad again, which is the book that I'm reading right now, and it's a second reading, and so I may just kind of cover the things that I got out of this reading. Until then, keep reading, keep learning, and keep listening. I'm out.